Chapter 6. An Unexpected Union. When I arrived back at Thornfield Hall, after my very long journey, I was surprised to see Mr. Rochester sitting outside. "Hello," he cried when he saw me approaching. "There you are. Come on in, if you please." I knew there would be pleasure in seeing Mr. Rochester again, even though I didn't know how much longer he would be my master. A few weeks of calm came after my return to Thornfield Hall. Nothing was said of my master's marriage, and I saw no preparation happening for such an event. During this time, Mr. Rochester paid no visits to Miss Ingram's home, but he called on me to join him more frequently in the evenings. Never had he been nicer to me, and as a result, never had I loved him more. One midsummer evening, I had put Adele to bed early, and after I left her, I went out to wander the garden. While admiring the beautiful colors streaking through the sky, I suddenly noticed Mr. Rochester nearby. His back was to me, but I saw he was examining a great moth that had landed on his foot. I thought I might escape the garden without his noticing me, so I began to move away. "Jane, come and look at this fellow," he suddenly said. I jumped at his voice. I was surprised he had seen me. The moth soon flew away, and Mr. Rochester suggested we take a walk. It was a beautiful evening, and he thought it would be a shame to spend it indoors. "Thornfield is a pleasant place in the summer, is it not?" he asked me as we strolled along a path. "Yes, sir." "I see you've become attached to the house, Jane. Would you be sorry to leave it?" "Must I leave Thornfield soon, sir?" I asked. "I believe you must, Jane. I've decided to send Adele to school." "Then you are going to be married soon?" I asked him as my heart was sinking. "Exactly. I hope to be married in a month, in fact." "I will advertise for a new position immediately," I said quietly. Suddenly, I felt tears start to roll down my cheeks. I tried to wipe them away without Mr. Rochester seeing them fall. "Are you crying because you're sorry to leave Thornfield?" he asked me. "I'm sad to leave Thornfield. I love it because I have lived in it a full and delightful life, so far at least. I also love it because I have known you, Mr. Rochester, and it strikes me with terror and heartache to have to leave you. But I must go." "No, you must stay," he said as he pulled me toward him. "I can't," I said, pushing him away. "Your bride, Miss Ingram, stands between us. I watched you courting her during her stay at Thornfield Hall." "My bride is here," he said, again pulling me toward him. "Blanche Ingram has no love for me. She's only interested in my fortune. I would not and could not marry her."
"Then why did you go through so much trouble to make me believe you wished to marry her?"
"I pretended to pursue Miss Ingram because I wanted to make you fall as madly in love with me as I was with you. I knew that jealousy would make you show your true feelings in the end. I only love you, Jane."
"What, me?"
"Jane, will you be mine? Will you be my wife?"
"Do you truly love me? Do you really wish me to be your wife?"
"I do, and I swear it."
"Then, sir, I will marry you."
Before I knew what had happened, a month passed and Mr. Rochester and I were soon to be married. The wedding day was just a few days away. All preparations for the event were complete, and my trunks were all packed. We were leaving for London right after the ceremony. On the morning of my wedding day, Adele's nanny came to dress me at 7 o'clock. It took a while for her to accomplish her task, and Mr. Rochester sent up to ask what was taking so long. I hurried from under Sophie's hands as quickly as I could and met him downstairs. We quickly made our way to the church, which was just beyond the gates of Thornfield Hall. When we entered the quiet sanctuary, the clergyman, Mr. Wood, was waiting at the altar. All was still, except I noticed two shadows moving in a remote corner. Two strangers had slipped into the church before us, and they now stood at the back of the room. Mr. Rochester and I took our places, and the service began. "Will you have this woman for your wedded wife?" the clergyman asked Mr. Rochester. Suddenly a distinct voice said, "The marriage cannot go on." Mr. Wood looked up at the speaker and stood silent.
Mr. Rochester shifted a little, but without turning his head or eyes, he said, "Proceed." The speaker moved forward from the back of the room. "Mr. Rochester cannot marry this young lady because he has a wife who is still alive." "I cannot proceed without some investigation into what has been stated," said Mr. Wood. "Who are you?" Mr. Rochester asked the stranger. "My name is Briggs. I'm a lawyer from London." "And you say I have a wife?" asked Mr. Rochester. "I would like to remind you of your wife's existence, sir, since the law still recognizes it," replied Mr. Briggs. "I can confirm and prove that 15 years ago, Edward Fairfax Rochester married Bertha Antoinetta Mason." Mr. Briggs then produced a document which he showed to the clergyman. "If this woman is alive, Mr. Briggs, where is she living now?" asked Mr. Wood. At this moment, the other gentleman who had been at the back of the church with Mr. Briggs spoke. It was Bertha Mason's brother, Richard Mason. "She is living at Thornfield Hall," said Mr. Mason quietly. "I saw her there myself last April when I went to visit Mr. Rochester." "At Thornfield Hall?" exclaimed the clergyman. "That's impossible. I am an old resident of the neighborhood, sir, and I've never seen or heard of a Mrs. Rochester." I couldn't find any words to say, and finally Mr. Rochester started to speak. "I have been married, and the woman that you call my wife lives. You say you haven't heard of a Mrs. Rochester at Thornfield Hall, Mr. Wood, but I'm sure you've heard rumors of a mysterious lunatic who lives there." Everyone in the small church was now listening very closely to every word Mr. Rochester said. He continued, "Bertha Mason is insane, and she comes from an insane family. I found out after I had wed Bertha, for the family kept silent about her history of mental illness. Bertha was charming at first, but by the time I found out her secret, it was too late. She tormented me and threatened my life until I was forced to lock her up in my own home. Come, all of you, and I'll show you." While Mr. Rochester was telling his story, he held onto my hand tightly. He then led me out of the church. Mr. Briggs, Mr. Mason, and Mr. Wood all followed us to Thornfield Hall. Once inside the hall, we went up the stairs to the third floor. Mr. Rochester's master key opened one of the doors. Once we stepped inside the room, Mr. Rochester lifted a hanging from the wall, uncovering a second door. This, too, he opened with his key. Inside the room, I immediately saw Grace Poole. She was bent over the fire, apparently cooking something in a pot. At the farther end of the room, a figure made growling noises. A large quantity of dark, wild hair hid the figure's head and face. Mr. Rochester greeted Grace Poole, who then warned us to keep our distance. A second later, she yelled, "Watch out!" At that moment, the figure lunged at Mr. Rochester and grabbed him by the throat. They struggled, and now I could see that it was a big, bulky woman who was almost the same size as Mr. Rochester. Finally, Mr. Rochester managed to pin her arms behind her back, and Grace Poole gave him a rope to tie them. "This is my wife," he then said, out of breath. "And this is who I wish to have as a wife," he said, looking at me. No one knew what to say, and the three gentlemen and I then slowly left the room. "You, madam," said Mr. Briggs to me, "are cleared from all blame. Your uncle will be glad to hear it." "My uncle? How do you know him?" I asked the lawyer. "I don't know him, but Mr. Mason does. He lives in Madeira, where your uncle also resides. Mr. Mason was with your uncle when he received your letter explaining your upcoming marriage to Mr. Rochester. Speaking of your uncle, Miss Eyre, I'm sorry to say that he is very sick, which is why he isn't here now. He sent Mr. Mason in his place." "I should go see my uncle," I cried. "I think you had better remain in England until you hear more news about your uncle's health," replied Mr. Briggs. "He might be dead by the time you reach Madeira. We don't know the state of his illness yet." The three gentlemen left Thornfield Hall, and I went straight to my bedroom. I needed time to myself to think over the many events that had just taken place. Although I forgave Mr. Rochester right away, I didn't tell him so. Even though I didn't love him any less, I knew I had to leave him. He had a wife who was still living, and I couldn't bear to be his mistress. That night, I thought I wouldn't sleep, but I dozed off as soon as my head touched the pillow. When I awoke, it was almost midnight. I knew what I had to do, so I started my task. I only had 20 shillings, but I put them in my pocket, gathered a few other items from my drawers, and left my bedroom. "Farewell, kind Mrs. Fairfax," I whispered as I passed her bedroom door. "Farewell, my darling Adele," I said to myself as I glanced toward the room where she lay sleeping. I stopped outside of Mr. Rochester's room. He was up and pacing the room. I was tempted to knock on the door and speak to him, but I knew the time for me to leave Thornfield Hall forever had come. When I got to the kitchen, I packed some bread and water in case I had to walk far. I did all this without making a sound. I then opened the door, passed through it, and shut it softly behind me. A moment later, I had stepped outside the great gates of Thornfield Hall. I was out and walking toward an unknown future.